It's another fine, if somewhat chilly, Sunday afternoon here in Asheville, the Paris of the sky. Paris of the sky. It is that. This used to be the city of the sky, and it's also the Paris of the South. So there you go. And today we've got a special program. Indeed, they're all special, but today is especially special because we have Miss Landon Godfrey joining us. Hello, Landon. How are you today?
Hi, I'm well. How are you?
And Sebastian Matthews.
Hey, Jeff. And we have Glennis Redman and Laura Hope Gill on her way. So
amazing. It's going to be quite a fabulous gathering here in the studio. Alrighty. And we're here for a specific purpose. We're actually going to talk about the women of Black Mountain College. Right now, the Black Mountain College Museum and Arts Center has a fabulous show of work by Black Mountain College artists, it's really quite remarkable. It's the first of three, and if you haven't seen it yet, if you're anywhere within driving range of Asheville, you ought to go by the center and see it. It's really, really remarkable
stuff. Downtown on Broadway. This show is actually going to be part of a stream of recordings by poets local poets, that's how to say it, who are going to be reading these Black Mountain College women poets, and those recordings will be available at the gallery to go as a kind of corresponding experience with looking at the show.
Right, right. In addition, of course, to being on the usual Wordplay archive, et cetera, et cetera. So, Landon, why don't you start us off? Well, I guess one of the writers, we're poets, let's face it. So one of the writers who's most interesting to us and has been to me for many years is Denise Levertov, who was one of the, she was never actually at Black Mountain College, but she's always been classified as one of the Black Mountain College poets because of her close relationships to Robert Creeley, to Robert Duncan, and all the usual cats. Let's hear some Denise.
Okay, here's a poem by Denise Levertov, Pleasures. I like to find what's not found at once, but lies within something of another nature, in repose, distinct. Gull feathers of glass, hidden in white pulp, the bones of squid, which I pull out and lay, blade by blade, on the draining board. Tapered as if for swiftness, to pierce the heart, but fragile, substance belying design, or a fruit, mamie, cased in rough brown peel, the flesh rose amber, and the seed a stone of wood, carved and polished, walnut-colored, formed like a Brazil nut, but large enough to fill the hungry palm of a hand. I like the juicy stem of grass that grows within the coarser leaf folded round, and the buttery yellow glow in the narrow flute from which the morning glory opens blue and cool on a hot morning.
Nice. I notice you're reading from an anthology. Which anthology is this that you're...
I'm reading...
Is this the Norton?
This is the Norton Anthology of Modern Poetry.
Yeah. So what of Denise's is in that?
It's an interesting collection from... That poem that I just read is from 1957, and the work goes from that period after she had abandoned the regular stanzaic work in her first book.
Right.
And then this is traced through her... subsequent experiments with the Black Mountain poets in, for lack of a better term, free verse, and the process poetry that they were enamored of rather than the product poetry that some others might be enamored of at the time.
Right.
And it goes through her struggles with how to incorporate the political realm into the poetic realm, and finally ends up with her struggle with Catholicism, which was her own struggle and a struggle that she inherited from her father.
Right, right. Yeah, the last decade of her life, she actually converted to Catholicism after this amazing, career otherwise, but...
Exactly, and her father had a very interesting passion. He was an immigrant to England, where she was born,
right.
and a Jew, and he converted to Catholicism, I think, at least some form of Christianity, but I think Catholicism, and wanted to marry the Jewish tradition with the Catholic tradition.
Right. And that became a passion of Denise's as well.
Mm-hmm.
Right. Right. Yeah. Well, good, good. So how many, just out of curiosity, how many poems of hers are there in the Norton now?
Wow. Okay.
Yeah,
well,
just,
let's
just,
see.
Let's quantify. Just
one, two, three, four, five, six, seven, eight, nine, 10, 11. She's well represented.
11.
And,
that's pretty good.
I was impressed to see that she got,
a 50-year body of work. It comes down to 11 poems.
Well, that is the sad part of the anthology in general. But I was glad that it wasn't just, you know, one poem,
yeah,
the cursory.
The representative poem.
The token poem.
Exactly.
Yeah. Right.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Huh. We have some of her books here, so we can...
Yeah. We have the actual... I know I started buying these back in, you know, the 60s in Chapel Hill, so and Sebastian's dad did as well.
So. Yeah, I see we have some great libraries represented here.
Yeah, like 1960-something.
Yeah, yeah.
72, so. Berkeley.
Berkeley, okay, all right.
Glennis, do you have... I'm not mic'd, so...
Yeah.
The question is... Oh, yeah.
Do you want to read us one of these poems?
Sure, I will. I just kind of slipped in here, so... Hello, everyone.
Hi.
How are you doing?
Good. How are you?
It's cold, beautiful Sunday. Yeah. Well, I think I'm going to be reading from by a poet by the name of M.C. Richards, which feels really synchronistic to me because she's one of the first poets I started reading when I came to Asheville, her book, Centering, which she's, if I'm not mistaken, was she's a potter.
A potter.
And a poet.
Yeah.
And so my... move to Asheville was a lot about learning how to center, which I haven't mastered yet.
Right.
But anyway...
it's a lifelong project.
Yeah, I like to blame it on that. But anyway...
let us know when you get the secret.
Yeah, definitely. Well, I'm gonna put it in a book and sell it at Malapropos.
Right.
But before
you'll
we talk...
You'll make millions.
Exactly. I have a plan. I have a plan. That's right. but this book is not from... the poem that I'm reading, it's called... it's not from Centering. It's Imagine Inventing Yellow. And talking about great libraries, this was inscribed, and it says, for Mary Holden and her faithful vision, M.C. Richards, Black Mountaineer, 1994.
Yeah, Mary Holden, of course, was the founder of the Black Mountain College Museum and Arts Center.
Yes,
Was in town recently.
Was in town recently.
Yeah, that's what I heard. And I don't know if we've ever met, but I can't, you know, hopefully one day our paths will cross.
Interesting lady. Yeah.
Yeah. So the poem that I'm going to read is called The Shaman Comes Home. Comes home, she comes, following a maze of bone seeds, crystalline, spelling her new becoming. Dismemberment and all her parts, boiled and eaten, scoured and stripped beside herself, ecstatic with singing. Singing the wild lullabies of the entrails in the smiling blue serene. Her moon nature is sunlit. The phallus rises in her womb. O androgyny and intimacy beyond gender. O terror of transformation. Whatever beast or bird has carried her, whatever raging snake has spat its hate through her crazed essence play, the sacred drum, the raven's whistle, the twitter of dancing beads. Sunk in filth, in vision, entranced, her skeleton dresses again its flesh for the brisk waking. Comes home, she comes, to the trees and mice, the streets and houses. Now forever sick and wounded she is, forever broken and whole, dead and alive, readied for the rituals of love. Sucking the sick breath, kissing the awful sores, dancing the illness and its mystical core. Comes home, she comes, to answer the mail, do the laundry, bury the garbage, dust the books, lay the fire, cook the rice, climb the mountain, plant and gather, sleep and wake, quake and weep, to live the world. she has become.
Nice. Yeah.
Yes.
That's MZ. Yeah.
I read that as I get ready to go on the road for 6.5 hours. So I'm like weeping only to take out the trash would be a luxury.
To bury it.
To sleep and wake.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. Awesome work.
Yeah. Yeah. She's pretty amazing. And she was there before Olson brought in the rest of the quote-unquote Black Mountain College writers. Mm-hmm. So she's never been, you know, classified as a Black Mountain College poet per se, you know, whatever that means. But but was a fantastic visionary, you know, woman artist. Yeah.
And if I'm not mistaken, she's still alive, right?
No, she did pass?
When did she pass?
Yeah. It's been a few years back, right at the end of the century, I believe, you know.
Okay. Yeah. I wasn't aware of that. Sorry to hear that.
Yeah.
What's the name of the video? It's a great video, The Fire Within.
The Fire Within. If you haven't seen that video, check it out. It's a documentary of her later years. Of course, yeah, I mean, there weren't people running around with cameras very often at Black Mountain College, except for Jonathan Williams and, you know. But yeah.
Hazel Archer.
That's right, Larson. So, yeah.
So she lived the end of her life in Pennsylvania?
Right. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And worked with learning disabled children, if I'm not mistaken. Kids with who were, quote-unquote, autistic and so on. Interesting work.
Yeah. Well, there's just this mystical element that runs throughout all of her work that is one of the things that's always appealed to me.
Yeah.
And how she manages to do that and to run that along with her pottery is quite beautiful. You can see the nature elements running alongside that as
She's
well.
She's always grounded. I mean, you know, which is, I guess, for a potter, you need to be, you know, because you're dealing with earth for one thing in a very physical way. But
she's grounded, but yet and still there's something about her work that flies as well.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
You know,
absolutely.
So it's, I guess the grounding is what gives her the ability to do that, to go off into those really, really far off places.
Yeah. Interesting mix.
Yeah. It's something that I really appreciate, which a lot of people, you know, it's hard to...
It's hard to do both those things.
Exactly. She's my role model.
Yeah. You know, the visionary taking out the trash.
Well, there it is. I mean, it's the mundane and the sacred all in one, which is what draws me.
Yeah. She's great. Yeah. Well, Sebastian, why don't you grab a mic? Let's get you on.
Okay. This is a poem. Actually, I'm going to read a brief section of an introduction by Stanley Kunitz about Hilda Morley, and then read you a poem that I think she wrote in the late 40s, though she might have written it. It's titled The Window for Matisse, 1942 to 49. But it's hard to say. She might have written it in the 60s. But Kunitz says, in the 50s of Black Mountain, Hilda Morley fell into the company of poets who could argue vehemently and long about problems of style. From Charles Olson in particular, she learned something about the importance of spacing and breath unit and line break, though her prosody in its eventual development is much more delicate and wavering than his, much less emphatic in its stressing. She prefers to slip tentatively into a poem, not to open with a flourish. Her characteristic line breathes naturally and is not conspicuously self-important, tending to fall to a weak syllable rather than rise to a strong one. She often avoids heaviness of sound or sense, for her ear is tuned to a light and mobile syntax. And I think you can hear all that in this poem, The Window for Matisse, 1942 to 49. After a long passage between narrow streets, the other side of a tunnel, an approach through a lengthening alleyway of trees which grow darker with the afternoon, or behind a doorway, or standing in a half-darkened room looking outward through a window frame, you catch sight of something, the reverse of what bounds, what rims it, an opening, an endless landscape turning on itself, unfolding, exposing always different planes, another side without fading, with no repetition, reflecting in strange confidence what seems shadow also, but by that trustfulness is shown to be instead light from the farthest stars. Each stalk, each leaf in the landscape, with an assurance that is almost stupid, revolving on its stem, emerges a flame in half darkness to offer an unheard of color, a new violet, an unimagined crimson, unaffected by what came before, by whatever happened, indifferent to misgiving, trust or mistrust, even its own hesitation. As we approach it in the semi-darkness from our distance, twilight falling, fixing our eyes on that aperture simply to keep us moving, traveling toward it in order not to stick at the point we're at or to go backwards. And as we hang on it with our eyes, tendrils, that landscape, glimpse of garden or sea or receding mountain is transformed, changes again and again each time we recover it, flame-like or more shadowy, more round, or pointed, to be bathed in and made silent. It is the long passageway, the rimmed window, the arching house fronts, the opening where the street dips and turns that make us silent. It is the doorway where we lean, uncertain, the dark alleyway where we can only stumble, that make us ready in our depletion. So we are thrown, and all our knowledge useless, into a depth that repeats renewal. And the endless that we see looks back at us and transforms us.
And we're back live in the studio, and with us, Laura Hope Gill, who's now magically appeared and is about to go on the air. And Laura, you're actually going to read, you know, one of the amazing, like poets in general. I mean, the Black Mountain College poets had impact on their generation and the generations after. So one of the contemporary poets, very, very good contemporary poet, who really owes a lot to the Black Mountain writers, as well as to the New York School, is Alice Notley. Alice, I know, met Robert Creeley, Robert Duncan, all the other usual suspects out on the West Coast, because she was associated with the Bolinas community for years and years, along with Ted Berrigan, her husband. So, yeah, let's hear a little bit of Alice.
At night, the States. At night, the States, I forget them, or I wish I was there in that one under the stars. It smells like June in this night so sweet like air. I may have decided that the States are not that tired, or I have thought so, I thought that. At night, the States, and the world not that tired of everyone. Maybe, honey, I think that to say in light, or whoever, we will never replace you. We will never replace you. But in like a dream, the floor is no longer discursive to me. It doesn't please me by being the vistas out my window. Do you know what? Of course not. I mean, I have no dreams of wakefulness, in wakefulness, and so to begin, my love. At night, the States talk, my initial continuing contradiction, my love for you and that for me, deep down in the purple plant, the oldest dust of it is sweetest, but States no longer how I would feel. Shirt, that shirt, has been in your arms, and I have that shirt. Is how I feel. At night, the States, will you continue in the association of matters, my dearest? Down the street from where the public plaque reminds that of private loving and the consequential chain trail there is, matters at night, the States, that it doesn't matter, that I don't say them. Remember them. At the end of this claustrophobic use dance, I wish I could see, I wish I could dance her. At this night, the States say them out there, that I am then indefinitely so, and so wishful, passive, historic, faded, and matter, simple, an eyeful. I wish, but I don't, and little melody. Sorry that these little things don't happen anymore. The States have drained their magics, for I have not seen them. Best not to tell. But you would always remain, I trust, as I will always be alone. At night, the States whistle. Anyone can live. I can. I am not doing anything doing this. I discover I love as I figure. Wednesday, I wanted to say something in particular. I've been where? I've seen it. The God can. The people do some more. At night, the States I let go of have let, don't let, some and some in Florida doing what takes you so long. I am still with you in that part of the park, and vice will continue, but I'll have a cleaning mane. Who loses these names loses. I can't bring it up yet, keeping my opinions to herself. Everybody in any room is a smuggler. I walked fiery and talked in the stars of the automatic weapons, and partly for you. Which you know, at night the States have told it already, have told it, I know it, but more that they don't know, I know it too. At night the States, whom I do stand before in judgment, I think that they will find me fair. Not that they care, in fact, nor do I, right now, though indeed I am they, and we say, not that I have erred nor lost my way, though perhaps they did they, and now he is dead, but you are not. I am this one, lost again. Lost and found by oneself. Who were you to dare sing to me? And that's the first half.
Wow.
<Of the piece. laughs> So, I read the final stanza. At night, the States, you who are alive, you who are dead, when I love you alone all night, and that is what I do until I could never write from your being enough. I don't want that trick of making it be coaxed from the words, not tonight. I want it coaxed from myself, but being not that. But I'd feel more comfortable about it being words. If it were that's what it were, for these are the States, where what words are true are words, not myself. Montana, Illinois, Escondido.
Alice does work in the long form quite often. Yes, yes.
They have some short form pieces too. But isn't that fun?
Yeah, fascinating stuff. Yeah, lovely. Yeah, good, good. Well, let's hear a little bit more of Denise too.
Yeah,
Glendon, let's take it away.
I was just, now I'm confusing myself. I just had something that I wanted to read. Okay, this is from her book, With Eyes at the Back of Our Heads. A happening. Two birds flying east hit the night at 3 p.m. Stars came out over the Badlands and the billowy snowlands. They floundered on, resolving not to turn back in search of lost afternoon. Continuing through cotton wildernesses, through the stretched night, and caught up with dawn in a rainstorm in the city, where they fell in semblance of torn paper sacks to the sidewalk on 42nd Street, and resumed their human shape and separated. One turned uptown to follow the Broadway River to its possible source, the other downtown to see the fair and goodly harbor. But each, accosted by shadows that muttered to him, pleading mysteriously, half hostile, was drawn into crosstown streets, into revolving doorways, into nameless small spaces back of buildings, airless air shafts, till no more was known of man, bird, nor paper.
Nice early Denise.
Yes, this book is published 1958, 1959.
Right, yeah. That was, right after she, well, she came to the U.S. in 1947 and met Creeley and those guys, I think in New York, actually. Paul Goodman, among others, all part of that New York scene at the time. Yeah. And then her work changed as...
Yes, I think that what we're seeing in this work is, from what I've read about her, her father's Jewish tradition was in the Hasidic tradition, which puts a lot of stock in finding joy in the everyday, the quotidian, the mud of the world, the stuff of the world. And I think when we see these... In some cases, this dichotomy of these birds turning into people and then struggling out into nothing in this poem, becoming paper and then nothing, is a way of seeing this transcendence through the everyday.
Through the everyday. And that was a theme of hers right on through. I mean, through the later work as well. You know, at the very end of her life, she was still dealing with that transcendence, with the issues of that transformation. So, yeah. Yeah, wonderful writer.
Beautiful.
Yeah, rich stuff. Yeah. So, but of course, there were other women at Black Mountain College as well. And Denise wasn't actually there, but she's there by association. So, but one woman who was there was Ruth Hirshberg.
Right, and I'm going to read two short poems by her out of a book called Nature and Love Poems. And from what I understand, she attended not just the Black Mountain College, but University of Chicago as well.
Right. And she was there, also one of the ones who was there before Olson and all the later, you know, what some of the earlier generation of Black Mountainers thought of as the Vandals, you know.
Yeah. Came in. Yeah. Well, Jeff, I love you having this historical context. The personal, too. I'm going to read, the first poem is called No, No, I Cannot Tell It. No, no, I cannot tell it, not tell love. Love despises those who read it. Clearly, sweetly, love despairs at those who spell it neatly, neatly. Love abhors the vacuum of the spoken word. The second poem is a nature poem.
Okay.
It's called Nature Poem.
Cutting right to the chase.
Yeah.
What kind of poem is it,
Liz? I think it's a pastoral poem.
Is there walking out in the sun?
Actually, we're going into the swamp, but you're trying to give my first line away. You never do that. I don't think Ruth would forgive you. Okay. Here we go.
Bad Sebastian.
There was too much swamp, too much blue in the sky. It ceased to be beautiful and was alien corn, trembling above a lake of clearest stone. I felt in the water, I felt the water, you. There were open leaves and sogginess to behold. The turtles, alert and dusky, touch my skin. Butterflies left for summer fled in the air without my so much as catching a fin. Speedily, darkly, the clouds brush like a dress over the spacious sun, and poor bereft, I bent my head like a burdened swan and crept into the chilly lake and nearer you.
Yeah. Yeah. Neat. Neat.
Did you know her personally?
I did not know
okay.
her personally at all. No, right. Or Denise, for that matter. But yeah.
Well, all of the poems in these books seem really very terse and very short, very formed. Mm-hmm. But I love how they expand off the page. I've been experiencing with pastoral poems, so it'd be interesting to like read a little bit more of her and see what she does with this.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
Seems like a nice little book. It's very compact in many ways.
Right. She wasn't prolific in the same way that Denise was. I mean, Denise wrote hundreds and hundreds of poems during her career, and I think mm-hmm. Ruth, you know, maybe had a couple of books out. Not a volume. You know, she would be the one who would be relegated to four poems in the Norton Anthology, you know, simply because she didn't produce as much work. Some early, very lyrical John Coltrane there. And you're listening to Wordplay on WPVM 103.5, the progressive voice of the mountains, all volunteer, people powered radio. So, Laura, share something with us.
This is a poem by Jane Mayhall, Waste Baskets. So not to make so many mistakes in the eyes of others, I wanted to invent a secret waste basket to throw away misleading prattle, mountainous as survival, disown what I'd said. Pristine as snow, hurtful as chimes, like a flowering theater party asked only by God, a diminutive music box that played a remembered poetry, my errors and bright circulations. But meant to be neat, my imagined wrongdoing into some receptacle. Imagine a catharsis, public statement improves, and thoughts anew. In all that heaven and debris, a lot of my first gut ideas were right. And now I'm going to head down the street to Malaprops.
Right.
Where I'm reading at 3 o'clock. So thank
That's
you,
right.
everybody.
Laura has a reading today for
Always
those of you.
Always a joy to be here.
Those of you local ought to head to Malaprops today to catch Laura. You know, you could even miss the last 5 minutes of wordplay.
Oh, no.
It'd be horrible to do that. But.
I was sitting in a restaurant in Australia once having a lovely breakfast, and I was listening to the radio above me, above my table, and said, and in 10 minutes, Laura Hopegill will be joining us in the studio. And I was about 15 minutes away from the radio station, and I did that run alongside the bus thing, but I got there. So thank you, everyone.
Good work.
To be here.
We'll look forward to your reading.
Thank you.
Yeah. Great. Okay. Laura, really, those of you out there in Radio Land who are listening live, those hearty few, do just turn off your radio right now, head over to Malaprops, and catch Laura. She'll be reading at Malaprops at 3. So. And she has some fabulous new work. So, great. All right. So let's, meanwhile, back at Black Mountain College and the ladies there. Okay. So, Landon, why don't you share? Are you reading some more Denise?
Yeah, why don't we?
She's so fabulous.
Well, she's so fabulous. Why don't we listen to something that's later? In her work, and I don't want to impose my own interpretation on this, but I'm pretty sure this is a Catholic poem. So,
what's with this Catholic?
I didn't know that was a category, but
yeah. Well, I would like you to tell me if I'm right or wrong at the end of this poem.
is it called Catholic poem?
That's right. Like that.
It's so close. And every time him appears, he's capitalized.
Oh,
so
okay.
I'm not, you know, right. I'm not really going out on a limb here.
Kind of a giveaway that we're, yeah.
Could be Olsen she's talking about.
Yeah. There you go.
This is called Icon, The Harrowing of Hell.
I think it's a Catholic
Thank
poem.
You.
No guess there.
Icon, The Harrowing of Hell.
I don't think it's icon.
Down through the tomb's inward arch, he is shouldered out into limbo to gather them, dazed, from dreamless slumber. The merciful dead, the prophets, the innocents just his own age, and those unencumbered others waiting here, unaware. In an endless void, he is ending now, stooping to tug at their hands, to pull them from their sarcophagi, dazzled, almost unwilling. Didymus, neighbor in death, Golgotha dust still streaked on the dried sweat of his body, no one had washed and anointed, is here. For sequence is not known in limbo. The promise, given from cross to cross at noon, arches beyond sunset and dawn. All these he will swiftly lead to the paradise road. They are safe. That done, there must take place that struggle no human presumes to picture, living, dying, descending to rescue the just from shadow. Were lesser travails than this, to break through earth and stone of the faithless world, back to the cold sepulchre, tear-stained, stifling shroud, to break from them, back into breath and heartbeat and walk, the world again, closed into days and weeks again, wounds of his anguish open, and spirit streaming through every cell of flesh, so that if mortal sight could bear to perceive it, it would be seen his mortal flesh was lit from within, now, and aching for home. He must return first in divine patience and know hunger again, and give to humble friends the joy of giving him food, fish, and a honeycomb.
Definitely. I don't know if it's Catholic, it's certainly Christian. Yeah, right. I mean, Golgotha body. That's a lovely, yeah.
Yeah. I love that it ends in the concrete, in the fish and the honeycomb. And I think the honeycomb for me was unexpected. Yeah. Mm-hmm. I know that honey is an anointing.
Exactly.
Right.
Unguent, yeah. But if sort of. But the honeycomb is so specific.
Mm. It is.
And so visual that I think, and cellular, it kind of is, it's not a tomb-like structure, but I love that it's that small and specific.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Her poetry, even from early to late, is so rich in imagery. I mean, the sense of the concrete is, it's always there. She's always, you know, surprising with these wonderful, wonderful little images. It's just, it's fascinating stuff. And that wasn't true of all the Black Mountain College guys. I mean, for sure. Yeah, especially the guys, the male Black Mountain poets. But yeah, she's definitely got that from even the early formal stuff. You know, wonderful, wonderful imagery.
In her prose as well, there's an essay, and I'm forgetting what it's called, but it describes jumping up and down in a hayloft, and then at the very end of the essay, finds that there's been a pitchfork standing straight up in the middle of it the whole time. Wow. She's just been, her and her friend have been jumping.
Yeah.
And that image, you know, so it's the, so thingness, you know, the William Carlos Williams,
right.
But
not in ideas, but in things.
But the things are, and like in this poem, everything has got a deeper symbolic meaning, but there's still things, you know, they're still like, so that pitchfork is death, or you know, that close,
they
resonate.
Yeah. And of course she was very, very much drawn to the work of William Carlos Williams. I mean, that was what actually got her to involved with the Black Mountain College guys, like Creeley especially, and the peripheral Black Mountain College guys like Paul Blackburn, because they all came out of Williams, you know, Williams and Pound. They were, you know, that's where they were. They had common roots. So they should have been family. I mean, you know. Yeah. So,
You looking at me?
I'm looking at you.
Oh, you looking at me, kid?
I'm reading here.
I'm looking at Primary Perceptions by Eva S. Jungerman.
Jungerman, yeah.
Jungerman, is it German?
I think it's German.
Sorry.
She was one of the German, group. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, well, let's hear some of that. I don't know her.
Do you know her? I don't know her either.
Yeah.
Landon? Yeah. Do you know her?
I don't know her.
Okay. Yeah.
So this is good to get to learn something.
Yeah. Okay. Well, that's what we're doing. This poem is called Houses. Like tiny boxes in the dark, the houses stand mysterious, haunted by a brooding sky, a silhouette that hides the inner joy and strife of life, a monument to man, a house, a home, protector, fortress, silent witness to mankind. A pyramid of our time reveals its spirit in a darkening glow. Close to the edge in mirthless joy, we celebrate the limits of desire. Protected by a layer of consciousness, we cannot hide the thorn in our breast. Like tiny boxes in the dark, our houses glow. The journey of our life continues in ever-growing circles. The calm decision of the heart transforms us. A soundless music plays. We must depart. Our destiny is clear as life moves on. An everlasting spirit makes every day the first and last endeavor to be met. And this poem was composed in response to Dorothy Risman's painting entitled House Remembered in an exhibition entitled Building for the Millennium. I love that metaphor of the house and how she just kind of expands, you know, throughout the poem. It starts this little concrete small image and just goes to the whole cycle of life and our place in it. Yeah. And I guess it's important to note, and I love this, you know, because I'm looking at a lot more paying attention to poem order in books. The poem that precedes is a poem about her mother who died, very young. And so it's a very interesting play, a poem choice, I believe. But I enjoyed that piece, even though I don't know her work.
Yeah, I did too.
I have to read some more of Eva.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah.
I'm a big fan of the poem that responds to a work of art.
Oh yes.
Yeah. The ekphrastic poem.
The ekphrastic poem.
Yes.
A real standby.
I'm always thinking of a way to say it differently, like the fraz or the
oh, you got to
fractic. My man Eck.
Trying to do a hip hop version.
Yeah.
Everybody.
Trying, huh?
Oh, I didn't mean. Was that a put down? I'm sorry. You're working too hard on it, Sebastian. We're going to call you Seb, Matt.
That was my first email at Maine.
Was it? I think so. Seb, Matt? Yeah. They call me G Red, so, you know, whatever.
Well, let's hear some more poems. Who's got what?
Why don't we listen to something from Martha King a book of selected poems, Imperfect Fit.
Okay, great.
She was also a Black Mountain student. I'm not so sure she taught there, but she was a student there.
A student there and married to Basil King, who was also a student. I believe they met there.
Basil King?
Of the Black Mountain College Kings.
The Black Mountain College Kings.
Is that a gang?
Well, since we're talking about kings, why don't I read a poem called Union Card and Paper Company. And you'll see why I'm choosing about 4 seconds.
Okay.
Union Card and Paper Company, in this country, kings wear hats. They sit on brick walls, a vantage for viewing, baby drunkards holding up their mugs. Then corn, cupids, boars, dogs who smoke pipes, elephants and snakes, and ladies, oh, the ladies, with so many spicy buttons, a neat coiled whip, and a record book.
Great sounds.
Yeah.
And that's from Imperfect Fit by Martha King. That's her selected poems, right? And I don't know her work
Martha
either.
Oh, Martha King, kings. Oh.
Making the connection.
Oh, maybe this is a little Ars Poetica, self-portrait.
Yeah.
Could well be.
I've got a short poem here by M.C. Richards called Three Wisdoms. Go slow, said the snail. Hop, hop, said the hare. Pace yourself, said the cheetah. It's a long run.
Yeah, it is. You guys want to hear the other poem that precedes the Eva poem?
Yeah.
My mother, she was gentle, never docile, like the eye of a hurricane. Firmaments moved around her in fury. An eclectic brood of temperamental offspring springing into action, then desisting. She was firm but quiet, her eyes fixed on the well-being of others. As she grew older, her legs hesitated in motion, but she pressed on. Her heart beat not in pleasure, but in pain. Her thoughts grew bolder, the mid-century beckoned. She was ready to live, her body faltered. She died young. Days came and went. The sun rose and set. A miracle of light. Night came and oblivion. She found peace. You see how those two poems work really well together?
Yeah. That's nice. Yeah. Well, I'll read one of my favorites, too. This is Denise Levertov in her book, Oh, Taste and See, which I think came out in the mid-60s, The Ache of Marriage. And this has a kind of addiction, I think, that really is identifiably Black Mountain College. So perhaps that's why I liked it. The Ache of Marriage. Thigh and tongue, beloved, are heavy with it. It throbs in the teeth. We look for communion and are turned away, beloved, each and each. It is Leviathan, and we in its belly, looking for joy, some joy not to be known outside it, two by two in the arc of the ache of it.
So when you say the diction, is it kind of that and jam line, the halting kind of breaking of word right. pairs that where it just
very
kind
much,
of drops
much.
Down?
Yeah. It almost sounds like a Creeley
poem. Thin line.
Yeah. Even though the lines are, these are like 4 and 5 words long, which are long for Creeley, but at the same period.
Looking at the clock, we might have time, if you think, for Landon to read one more poem. And we're wondering at the pronunciation of this poet.
Cynthia Homeyer. Yeah. Mm-hmm. She was just here, like a few weeks ago for the panel.
For the panel, UNCA.
Fascinating, fascinating woman. Yeah.
This seems like very playful work.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. She spent her life as a potter, or as a ceramicist, and turned to poetry only after her hands basically gave out. She's now in her, late 70s, I guess, so can no longer do the heavy lifting that pottery or, that clay requires. So is now writing, yeah, happily.
Awesome transition, if one needs to make one.
Indeed.
This is called Mental Antics of the Antique Mind. Mind in a bone box, looking out at imagined face, from the distance of a nose, from the distance of a photograph, sees its smile while washing dishes.
Kind of shades of Jonathan Williams with the wordplay and some of the
absolutely
I'll never get over that one Jonathan Williams thing I heard about Asheville being Asheville. This is, I love the human mind. I was like, I wish I would have thought of that.
Yeah.
My goodness.
He's so good at that.
Oh my
Always
God.
Always turning things.
Just that turning. Yeah. I've lived here 11 years, by God.
Yeah, just the mental antics of the antique mind.
Right,
yeah.
Right. That's it. Yes,
it's beautiful.
Yeah.
It's very nice. Yeah. Very nice indeed.
And that's from a book, a chapbook size, Insights and Outbursts. And it was printed, looks like, this year.
Yeah. It's brand new.
All right.
Yeah, right. And so you can get a first edition of it.
Yeah, through Taos, New Mexico.
Yeah.
Great.
Cynthia Homeyer. Good.
Well, Landon and Glennis, Jeff, thanks for having us all on the show.
Thanks for coming in.
It's good to have you guys.
That's great to be here on this Sunday.
Laura.
Yeah.
It's a pleasure.
And please go check the show out.